Hi, this is Jennifer Sage with the Indoor Cycling Association, and we have a great interview for you. I wanted to say great show. We have a great show. Just like,
thank you,
just like
Stewart.
John Stewart. Because I am here with Jennifer Clow, Dr. Jennifer Clow, and we are going to talk about something that has been, a lot of people have brought this to my attention in the last couple months. But I have encountered this over, oh gosh, the whole time I was a master instructor, even for spinning out there doing orientations, when instructors would come up and say, my student just came up to me and said their personal trainer said that spinning was bad for them and they shouldn't do it. And fairly recently, this the end of 2011, a certain anti-cardio person has been putting out articles that say that aerobics, any kind of aerobic training, any cardio is bad for you. And there's been more and more. It's been out there on Facebook. It's been online. It's been everywhere. So I decided to go to someone who knows a little bit about this, Jennifer Clow.
Thank you. And as you and I have had numerous email exchanges and conversations about this, I do get a little bit exercised about the subject for a couple of reasons. One of the first is that, look around us in the United States and around the world. People who exercise regularly are a distinct minority. And so somehow this notion that you've got to attack or put down some other form of exercise to enhance what you do, just at the very best, it's misguided. And it's, I think that, you know, you could characterize it to a certain extent as irresponsible.
Oh yeah.
Especially when you're wrong.
because and that's what we're here to talk about.
Yeah, well, that's it. And in certain cases, look, as a scientist and someone who spent a lot of time being trained how to interpret data and what conclusions are valid and what are not of your own data, never mind of what you read that someone else has done, you know, this is something that is very frustrating. It happens regularly that somebody will publish a study and someone in the media picks up on it because it's interesting sounding, like, you know, running backwards will kill you in five steps or less, or say, you know, just something crazy, and it will get blasted all over. And the problem is that now some science writers at some publications do a very good job, and they're usually pretty much right on the money, and their interpretations of the studies are in line with the import. For example, if it was a study of five people, they'll say, you know, it was a really small study. This is interesting what they found, but I wouldn't go changing my life based on this. Whereas from the headlines, you wouldn't know that.
Yeah.
So when someone sort of lists a paper as one of the sources that they're relying on and yet manages to draw conclusions that are exactly the opposite of those the authors came to, I want to jump up and down and scream and yell and stuff like that. Well, that's not going to help anybody. So a much better option is the one you're offering, which is to talk about it and to talk about why it's wrong. And also just for people who are listening to this, people who are confused, there is a lot of confusing information out there. No question. And when I first read this and I saw this, the articles, I said, I'm like, holy cow, what? Really? How come I don't know this? I've read all those articles or a lot of them. And then, of course, I went back and reread them. I was like, oh, wait. And it's very easy, by the way, to draw the wrong conclusions from scientific publications because they are, in many cases, even if you're in the field, they're obtuse. And it's a particular language. And what sounds like the conclusion that maybe you can draw oftentimes really isn't what they're saying.
And isn't often the title, it's kind of their hypothesis that something's going to be bad. Is that included in the title?
Sometimes. It depends. It depends. I mean, they're not usually trying to go for sensationalism in a scientific publication, although, you know, you have showmen in science just like any place else. But even reading the abstract, you know, sometimes it will say, you know, it will list like their methods and but it's very brief. And sometimes you have to actually go into the article to see what they're really saying. And so what it seems to say on the face isn't always what it really says, or again, you know, yeah, it's a small study, or it was done on rats, or, you know, it was done on people who were only, you know, who were 12 feet tall, or, you know, just something where you just can't go and say, yeah, hey, this applies.
Yes. Well, so what's the bad news here? What we're being told as the bad news is that bad news number one, aerobic training raises cortisol and accelerates aging.
Okay. Well, it is true that it elevates cortisol, but the important, it's like, you know, sound bites with politicians where they expressed a sort of more nuanced thought and it gets chopped off after like some set of words that sounds really salacious and like, oh, this guy's a jerk and he just wants to, you know.
Right. Or it's taken out of context.
Completely out of context. So yes, cortisol does get elevated in exercise and then it goes back down. Now, if you have sort of chronically elevated levels of cortisol, it is entirely possible that it is nothing to do with exercise that you're doing and much more to do with other stresses in your life and other lifestyle choices that are lousy. One of the things that has to be said is that, it wasn't in this particular site that we're discussing now, but others have sort of said, oh, you know, yeah, you're going to get these giant legs filled with fat from doing indoor cycling classes, to which you and I both said, you know, kiss my glutes.
Exactly.
You know, while you bounce a quarter off my quadriceps. So just that's like the, you know, people saying, oh, well, if you stop exercising, your muscle turns to fat. And it's like, you know, tissue types don't interchange with each other.
Right.
You may gain weight. That's a separate issue. But we have to sort of put it out there that, and you and I are very, very frustrated by this, along with many of our colleagues, there are plenty of indoor cycling classes out there that, in fact, are completely ineffective and possibly counterproductive. Not that your legs are going to fill with fat, but, you know, that people are not encouraged to push the appropriate amount of resistance. And if that flywheel is going a million miles an hour and, it, you know, you've just got all this momentum in there and your muscles aren't doing any work, you're not going to get anything out of it.
Yeah.
Just as if you are doing quote-unquote strength training in a gym and you're lifting 5-pound weights, you know, your bag weighs 10 pounds. This is not going to do anything.
Right.
And any of these things, the battle of the bulge, you know, exercise is good. It is important. It is important for long-term health and well-being. It can assist in weight loss. But quite honestly, that battle is won or lost in the kitchen and at the table. Those are the you know, that is the sort of the most important venues. Exercise can only kind of help. Now, we know people, you know, you and I, who have taken up exercise, sometimes indoor cycling, and said, you know, oh my gosh, I lost all this weight. Well, yes, but clearly you also, even if you don't think you modified your eating, there's a well-known effect of sort of when you take up one good habit, you often, even unconsciously, will adopt others.
Yeah.
Because you're feeling good and you're feeling good about what you're doing. So anyway, so I'm not going to say, oh yeah, any indoor cycling class, awesome. Any of it all has to be done correctly. However, to indict aerobic exercise as this danger to its practitioners. Now, he does sort of say, well, you know, if you've just gotten up off the couch, it's okay. But, you know, after that, you got to just switch to strength training. As I have also said, there is no question that if what you are going for, if you are a bodybuilder, or if you are going for sort of maximum development of muscle tissue and muscle strength, so for competition, or, you know, you're just devoting your life right now to getting all, you know,
bodybuilding,
right, you know, where you're sort of like, that's this phase. It's not just sort of a pursuit of fitness or, you know, losing some weight, but, you know, you're going full on into this. From the strength training end of things, it's true that aerobic exercise, cardiovascular exercise, does interfere in something called the mTOR pathway and therefore will inhibit sort of maximal production of muscle tissue. No question. That's well known. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that for the rest of us here on planet Earth, and again, extreme endurance athletes cannibalize lots of muscle, and they need to do strength training at least in the off season to help rebuild. But the good news for those of us who primarily do endurance exercise, and yes, we do need strength training. Absolutely. It is an important part of, long-term health and well-being for anyone, most of us. Endurance exercise does not interfere with the generation of muscle tissue, just being strong and looking good for sort of maximal competitive ultra guy.
On either end.
And exactly.
Either extreme.
Right, either extreme. But for the rest of us here, the great 99% in the middle or whatever we are, of that small fraction of people who actually bother to exercise. And I'm sure you've had people come up to you and say, Jen, I'm doing everything right and I'm not losing weight or I'm not, And I say to people, look, by definition, something's not right. If you are really doing things the way you think you are, which often the case is, that 900 calorie Starbucks thing in the morning that I call coffee. Oh, oops.
Yeah.
But by definition, if it's not going the way you want, something's not right. But that doesn't mean that you indict an entire sort of category of
exactly. You just
exercise.
Change it up a little bit, and the body will plateau.
Oh yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I mean,
Well, let's.
So I've gone through a bunch of these articles, among others, to refresh my memory and to sort of say, yeah, that's right. I didn't think they said that. Now, there's a couple of them. I'll pick on one in particular because this was cited at one of these sites, which you have a link to. And I'm not engaging in kind of a personal vendetta here. I know that there are people who they love strength training. That is their world. And that's great. I think strength training is very important. I happen to really enjoy, cycling, and not even so much necessarily indoor cycling, which I consider sort of it's a good way to pass the winter if you live someplace like, where you have a long winter. But there is nothing like being out on your bike, for 4, 5, 6 hours on a gorgeous day and just sort of smelling the smells So, there's that whole aspect of it too. But I'm also glad to know that it's not detrimental to my health. And it's important for people to know that.
And it's not going to give you cottage cheese thighs or increase your inflammation and oxidative stress.
Yes, technically speaking, it does increase those things. But here again, the authors of these articles say, yeah, these things increase, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's bad because we're looking at people who are really healthy and who aren't having detrimental effects. And in fact, if you take people who aren't healthy and have them perform endurance exercise, well, gosh, what do you know? They get a whole lot healthier.
Yeah.
So I've got a couple money quotes here.
Okay. From the research articles that he has cited.
These are, yes, a couple that have been cited and then a couple that I've just pulled because they're on the subject.
Okay.
So one of them was where they were looking at inflammatory markers and they did, this is one where they did the hair test. They measured their hair to look back at, so that you get a, same reason they test for drugs in your hair, because unless you cut it really short, it gives kind of a timeline. And you are led to believe that the conclusions these authors came to was that, ooh, this is bad because it increases inflammatory markers. And in fact, what the authors say is that although inflammatory markers were increased after moderate exercise, all pre- and post-exercise values were within the normal range and not harmful to subjects' health from a clinical point of view. So, yeah, they were increased, but that doesn't mean it's bad.
The conclusion that he was drawing.
He was drawing that it was bad. He was saying it's bad, because you have increased levels of these things, it's bad. And frankly, the one of the other articles from Exercise Immunology Review, the Walsh et al. Position statement, goes to great, great pains with a whole lot of evidence to say, yeah, some of these things change. That isn't showing that these things are bad, or that they're, and they are careful to point out that different, the same stimulus will have different responses depending on where you start. You know, it's like pushing, you know, if you have a giant truck come up and push a car, how far it rolls. Well, you know, it depends on sort of where it is, where the brake's on, how heavy was the car that, you know, that received the push, all these kinds of things. Like, you can't just sort of say any car that you push will go 10 feet.
Yeah.
You know, it was at the top of a hill. What do you know? It went rolling all the way down. So what these authors say, they say repeated moderate cycling has an anti-inflammatory effect and may protect individuals from chronic disease. And that the changes in inflammatory indices between the active people and the non-active people were very small. So that's one of the papers. As I mentioned, this Walsh paper talks about, you know, that the positive effects of exercise on immune function and various other measures, it's incontrovertible. It is supported by so many studies. And it's not like these people are all idiots or something. You know, some of them have come at it from the point of view of, oh, I want to show this is bad. Oh, what do you know? It isn't.
Well, exercise is good for you. So he is citing references that are actually support counter to what he is claiming.
Yes, the authors have come to pretty much the opposite conclusions that he would like to draw from their work. And that could be for a lot of reasons. It could be because he didn't have access to the entire article. That happens a lot. I don't get free full text access to anything anymore now that I'm not, with the university, which to me is, a tragedy. And you can't just read the abstracts, although often they will give you a pretty good idea of what's going on. You cannot just read the abstracts and sort of decide that that's what that says. And I think what happened is, you know, this is sort of like, oh, look, this is increased and I know this is bad. Well, yeah, but that's, you know, people who know an awful lot more than either any of us about that didn't come to that conclusion, and they're the ones doing the work. There was a recent publication. Let's see, where was this? In a journal called the International Journal of Sports Medicine in 2011, about the increased average longevity among Tour de France cyclists. And I'll just give you kind of, again, what I call the money quote here. It is widely held among the general population and even among health professionals that moderate exercise is a healthy practice, but long-term high-intensity exercise is not. You know, nobody knows how much activity, you know, is necessary for good health. It's unclear. To date, longevity studies of elite athletes have been relatively sparse, and the results are somewhat conflicting. Tour de France is among the most grueling sports in the world, so they wanted to see if, you know, what was the longevity.
And the Tour de France has just celebrated its 100th year, so right, we have a lot of data, a lot of riders.
Right, or 100th that. Edition, because 100th year was...
That's true, because it wasn't during the war, so...
Right. So it's... Didn't they do the 100th year, but now they've done the 100th edition, or vice versa? Because remember, there was 100 like a couple years ago, and I think it was the year.
Well, and this is 1903 was the first year.
Right.
1903.
Right. So 2003 was the, remember, because they had all this. I remember this. They had all the stuff, like, you know, 100th year, and yeah. So now it's the 100th edition. So, you know. Why not celebrate twice? I'd do it if I could.
Yeah.
So anyway, they said our major finding is that repeated very intense exercise prolongs lifespan in well-trained practitioners. Our findings underpin the importance of exercising without the fear that becoming exhausted might be bad for one's health. Now, I will add a qualifier, which is, you know, I always say to people, you are your own lab rat. And each of us responds differently to different things. And we are coming into this era of personalized medicine where we are able to look at, you know, oh, you have this deletion. Okay, well, this medication will work better for that disease.
Kind of based on your DNA?
Based on, right, your genome, or your personal genome, where you know, they're just able to look at all kinds of things. And it's still in its infancy, and it's still very expensive. And unless you are, you know, have access to, you know, some people, Steve Jobs actually was able to get his genome sequenced, you know, because he was able to pay for it privately. Uh-huh. And they kept updating his cancer treatment based on, because his the disease kept mutating and becoming resistant to whatever treatment. So they would tweak it. And that's the wave of the future. And that'll be sort of available to more people soon. But the sort of qualifier is that everyone responds differently to different things, and you do have to listen to your own body. That, you know, I do believe that it has a wisdom if you listen.
Exactly. If you would listen, that's true, that too many people don't listen to their bodies. And so when people are not having results just doing cardio or just doing strength training,
right,
then for your body, for your system and the way you respond, maybe you need to mix it up a little more.
Right. Or maybe something is not intense enough. Maybe it's too intense. Maybe it's, you know, who knows? And, you know, I think sometimes people often, when they finally find something that works or they finally make the changes they have to make, you know, you get this sort of evangelical zeal. It's like, well, I used to do that, you know, but it never did anything for me. And now look at this. You know, one of these websites we had visited with this misinformation talks about, well, there was this person, you know, she's a swimsuit model, I don't know, TV star, something. And yeah, she was doing indoor cycling and she wasn't getting anything out of it. She hated it. Okay, well, there's your first clue.
Yeah.
If you hate indoor cycling.
Or whatever it is you're doing.
Exactly. How much running do you think you're going to get out of it? And you know, and she stopped doing that and just started doing this, and man, she looked amazing. Like, hey, great, but that proves nothing except that it worked for her.
Right.
There is no one size fits all. You know, I think some of the CrossFit stuff looks like fun. Some of it, forget it. Just my biomechanically, I wouldn't subject myself to it. But I have an old shoulder injury. There's no way I can lift heavy. It just, I've got too much scar tissue, and it just gets aggravated. It bums me out. But on the other hand, some things just aren't for some people. And, you know, you have to be careful. And again, there's practitioners out there who really don't know what they're doing biomechanically. And unfortunately, some of these people fall into their hands and get hurt because.
I have a link to a blog post I put up, and a bunch of CrossFit people thought I was knocking CrossFit. I was just knocking bad practitioners, bad coaches.
And again, like I said in the very beginning, there are bad practitioners, unfortunately, of all of this, and the fitness industry, because it doesn't require any kind of licensure. I mean, it's harder to become a manicurist than a personal trainer.
This is true.
Anybody can say they're a personal trainer, or at least in most places, and not in other countries, but in the U.S.
Yeah.
Any idiot, you know?
Yeah. Right.
You know, and you can get yourself all nice and buff in a gym, sort of despite what you do, especially if you're someone who responds. And
which is a genetic response, isn't it?
What's that?
Some people are, don't they call that fast responders, because it's a genetic predisposition for adding muscle?
Yep, absolutely. And in fact, they think that's one of the things that doomed the Neanderthals, was that they were more muscular. Muscle is very biologically expensive, metabolically active tissue.
There we go.
See, but seriously, from a scientific perspective, some people posit that the reason that Homo sapiens kind of became dominant is because we could lope around all day and, you know,
endurance,
chase down antelope and make it die of heat stroke pre-cooked. and that Neanderthals, you know, they couldn't do it. They didn't have the endurance.
They're lifting too many heavy things.
I say that in good fun, but they were more muscular.
Finish your thought, and then I'm going to bring you back to another article.
Okay. I was just going to say that, you know, again, this is, I really think that as sort of seekers of excellence in our respective areas of, you know, practice, I really think that there's a lot more to be said for at least acknowledging the expertise of folks on the other side of the fence and not looking at these things as mutually exclusive. I mean, I just, yeah, I don't see any need to knock all these things, you know, sort of what somebody else does. You know, it's not like they're smoking, you know?
Exactly.
Smoking is bad for you. Other things, if it works for you, hey, have a field day.
Well, this would be a great place to end this, but and I don't want to make this too much longer. However, we were talking beforehand about one of the articles, and I just want to bring you back to that one because it was very interesting, and that was the one about the rats.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to talk about mice and their mutated DNA, because it you don't have to know anything about mutated maternal DNA to understand the money quote.
Yeah.
The rats. There was an indication in this article we're talking about, the web article, that excessive endurance exercise causes a decreased reproductive function and reduced organ size. Now, the study cited was rats, and whether you can generalize what happens to rats to humans is sort of the first issue. The second is that the rats were exercising 3 hours a day, 5 times a week for 4 weeks. In a rat lifespan, that is a huge percentage
of their life.
Life and just, you know, sort of their hours. Plus, the way that you keep rats exercising for 3 hours a day, by the way, these aren't rats that particularly enjoy whatever aerobic exercise they had them doing.
Yeah, they don't walk in and say, oh, I think I'll choose the Stairmaster today.
Yeah, right, yes. I'm going to go for a little spin on my wheel, you know, my running wheel. No, you, I got the catalog once from one of the suppliers. You have little rat treadmills and rat swimming flumes, and you shock their tail. That's how you
do what? You shock their tails.
You shock their tail. You give them electrical shock. It's like a cattle prod kind of thing.
Yeah, and it just keeps them going. I would say that would be a little bit stressful.
Yeah, just a little. So you can't even separate this change in reproductive capability from the stress of being shocked into running 3 hours a day. And I don't recall from the article, I don't recall that they were able to control for that in any way, because I don't see how you would.
Yeah.
And then the web article says, you know, oh, and this is similar to, you know, people preparing for a marathon. And I'm thinking, well, everyone I know who's ever prepared for a marathon, A, doesn't run the equivalent of sort of 3 hours a day. They don't even run 3 hours a day, except maybe once a week on a long day, mm-hmm. and not even every week. And they weren't being whipped into it.
Yeah.
Not so much as they would admit. So to kind of casually make that leap is just, again, it's just, you know.
Irresponsible.
It's not the right thing to do.
Yeah.
So let me just, I got two more money shots here, okay. Money quotes for you. One, it speaks about, they're both similar. One of the other things that's mentioned in that article, and that is often tossed around, you know, we've all heard of antioxidants and, oh my gosh, you know, got to take your antioxidants, got to do this, got to do that. And the fact is, as one writer, a long and complex article on, gee, what is a reactive oxygen, you know, species, because there's these other, you know, he went through it from a sort of chemical point of view. And even though it would seem simple to define, it really isn't, because there's other things that go along with it. But until the 90s, they were perceived as strictly bad for you. You know, oh, these aren't good. And now their research has become much more nuanced. We have more advanced technology. And now they're sort of looking at it going, oh, actually, you know, they're involved in signaling, first of all. And you actually end up having more reactive oxygen species production in type 2 muscle fibers versus type 1 muscle fibers. Let's review type 2 or fast switch muscle fibers.
Uh-huh. Bell, the light bulb just went off.
Yeah. So, you know, that's interesting. I'm thinking I'm going to go maybe pull that article. But the other thing, one of the, this is an article not cited by the web article, the one that I'm reading from now. It says that some evidence really seems to point to a functional role for these reactive oxygen species in protecting hypoxic, meaning muscle not that, that's got a, you know, not as much oxygen as you might hope for one reason or another, not necessarily exercise per se, but by sort of preserving energy stores in a low energy state, meaning, you know, for example, when muscle is overstimulated and you experience fatigue, that's protective, because if you didn't fatigue and slow down, your muscle cells could literally end up exploding.
Yeah.
The processes were allowed to continue. So, you know, it may in fact be an important and beneficial, or certainly because it goes on all the time, you know, it's involved in the signaling. And again, just because we thought it was bad, Walsh goes to great lengths to say, we don't find the evidence. We don't
see it.
So I will conclude with a study done on mice, but they were using them as a model for sort of aging and disease. And they picked a mouse that has a mutation in mitochondrial DNA that causes all kinds of dysfunction and a reduced lifespan. And they said, well, you know, gosh, studies in humans have demonstrated that endurance training reduces the risk of a lot of things and extends life expectancy. But we don't know whether it can attenuate or help sort of stave off the cumulative decline observed in these mice with this problem. And they said, here we show that 5 months of endurance exercise the endurance exercise prevented the depletion of this mitochondrial DNA and the mutations, and it increased the oxidative capacity of the mice. It sort of blunted bad stuff, and they said that the systemic rejuvenation through endurance exercise promises to be an effective therapeutic approach to mitigating dysfunction and aging. And I believe this is the article. Nope, that's the other one. Okay. I wanted to read that quote basically where they were saying that, you know, endurance exercise. Hold on. Oh, here we go. There is incontrovertible evidence from epidemiological studies that endurance exercise extends life expectancy and reduces the risk of chronic diseases. And then they say, you know, they put in parentheses, articles 7, 8, 9, 10, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, and 21. And that's, so there's that whole bunch of articles that they're citing, and that's not even, you know, the entirety of articles that would support that point of view.
Yeah.
So I would say, never fear. Do your aerobic exercise. Do it wisely. And you know what?
And do strength it correctly, you know, with the right amount of good technique. And as, you know, we're talking to mostly indoor cycling instructors and practitioners, I believe, unless this gets spread around to everyone else, resistance. Don't forget your resistance.
Right.
So now we've talked a lot about some of the, you know, refuted some of the claims and looked at the scientific studies. I am going to end on one other thing, and that is my own little study of one, N equals one.
N equals one, yep.
The most fit, the best I've ever felt, and the best I think I've ever looked was when I was doing, has been when I have been doing a lot of cardio exercise. Yes, I also lifted weights, but you know,
and that's important. It's important, I think, particularly for men.
If you go to a spinning conference or, you know, most fitness conferences where the people attending them probably have some adrenal stress because many of them are truly training too much.
Right.
But, oh my God, do they look great?
Yep.
You know what?
Yep.
You can't tell me that spinning gives you cottage cheese thighs.
No, if you have them, you're gonna have them. No matter what you're doing. Honestly,
that's the genetic component. And then also where I live in Colorado, which is the most fit state in the United States.
Yep.
And in particular, where I live up in the Rocky Mountains, there are. Oh, just everybody is into cardio. Probably, over 90% of the population that live here are very into cardio, and some of them excessively, perhaps. But I mean, we have they're fit, they're strong, they're beautiful, they're aging so well. They're into their 80s and 90s, and they're still skiing. And they're still riding their bikes up Vail Pass.
Sunscreen is more important, I think, honestly, for as an anti-aging strategy
than not doing cardio. Exactly.
Right.
All right. Well, Jennifer, it's been really wonderful poking holes in this with you. And
my pleasure.
Hopefully, and maybe on a future discussion, we can actually get into kind of narrow it down as to too much high intensity bad for you.
Right,
so,
right.
And I think the takeaway is having balance in your life, having balance.
Absolutely,
in your life,
and you don't have to cut someone else down to to support what you're doing.
There's room
in the world for all kinds of stuff.
Exactly. All right. Well, thank you again, and
My
thank
pleasure.
You for everyone who stuck around and listened to this.